You're listening to Richard Ellis Talks with Richard Ellis. If you're looking for some encouragement, words of hope, and maybe a laugh or two, that's exactly what Richard wants to share with you today. We know life can get pretty busy and complicated, so we're truly grateful you've chosen to take a break and listen to the program. Now, if you're not able to hang out with us for the entire program, you can always pick it back up at our website, richardellistalks.com. In fact, you can find all of Richard's talks right there waiting just for you, richardellistalks.com. So, with today's talk, here's Richard Ellis.
The title of today's message is Vice Grips. I actually brought some today, some from the house. This is an interesting little piece of equipment right here. I just need a volunteer. I was going to demonstrate what it can do to a finger if I have a volunteer. Some of you may not know what this will do. This is not like a pair of pliers. This you can kind of set on what it is you're trying to hold onto, and you screw this little deal in, and there's a little tension function, and when you click it, it sticks. It holds really, really, really tight, tighter than you could with your own hands. And before we're done today, we're going to have a better picture of how the enemy basically not put your finger, but your life in a grip, something like this, in an attempt to destroy you, steal, kill, destroy, all the things that we talk about so often that he does. Vice, a practice or a behavior or habit generally considered immoral, depraved, or degrading in the associated society, which, by the way, we're running out of stuff. Nothing's a vice anymore. It's politically incorrect to call something a vice. Oh, it's not a vice. It's just that's my choice. In more minor usage, vice can refer to a fault, a negative character trait, a defect, an infirmity, or a bad or unhealthy habit. Synonyms for vice. This is fascinating. Listen to the synonyms for vice. Include fault, depravity, sin, iniquity, wickedness, and corruption. Straight out of a dictionary. The modern English term that best captures its original meaning is the word vicious, which means full of vice. In this sense, the word vice comes from the Latin word vitium, meaning failing or defect. You got vice squads. I found out if you have an addiction like to the Sound of Music, that's an Edelweiss, just a little known fact. So, hey, I had to put it somewhere, so there we go. Just trying to work new material in there as we can. A vice squad is a police division whose focus is stopping moral crimes like gambling, narcotics, pornography, and illegal sales of alcohol. I've already told you some of the definitions. Dante, some of you know who Dante was back from the 1200s, poet, writer. He came up with seven deadly vices: pride or vanity, envy or jealousy, wrath or anger, sloth or laziness, avarice, gluttony, and lust. Here's a question for you. Do you think that the devil, or would you be willing to admit that the devil may have you in one of these? See, until you get yourself lost, it's really hard to be allowed to be found. At some point, you got to look in the mirror and go, you know what? I got a problem. The problem is we limit our problems to problems we don't have. Well, I don't have those problems, so I must be okay. And then we get blinded, we get deceived into thinking our struggle is just some struggle. Pornography. I could look at this crowd and pick you out, the young boys. You say, well, little boys don't even know what this is. But when they're shown stuff and those images get put in their head, if I got microphones out and passed them around the room and tell me what your experience has been, it is like a black hole that sucks you in, and it is never enough. Never enough. It always takes more. And we have men who have gotten up publicly in men's meetings and said it started out with a little bit of this, a little bit of this, ended up picking up women, paying for it. It go. You say, that'll never happen to me. Supposedly what you're doing now you thought would never happen to you. And some people say, well, I just cannot imagine how someone could look at something like that and get caught up in that. And you know what? People who are caught up in that look at you and go, I could not imagine that someone could get caught up in what you're caught up in. You say, well, what do you think it is I'm caught up in? It might be pride, thinking you're all that. And the book says, let him who stands take heed lest he falls. You could do a cursory Google search on the effects of drugs, alcohol, pornography, any of these things on the brain. You ought to go do that. And what happens to the brain? Everybody is basically just trying to get high. And it's not limited to just drugs. For some people, stealing, for instance. Don't raise your hand if you're a thief because we don't have time to arrest everybody today. You know, for some people, and you laugh like, oh, well, that's funny. If you're a thief, you're a kleptomaniac, you've got that issue, you walk into a store and you can have millions of dollars. We see it all the time. And you go in and just the rush, the feeling of, oh my gosh, my heart, I'm nervous, my hands are sweaty, and I got away with something. We're all trying to get high. That's all it is, because we feel so low. But the getting so high takes us to a low place that we can't even deal with anymore. And robs us of intimacy, of relationships, of the things that we really do want. And it's all for a quick hit. The problem is it works. That is the disaster of drugs, alcohol, anything, is that they work. All these things will incite certain things. The problem is you can't sustain that lifestyle. And sooner or later, the consequences come. You reap what you sow. And then it's not so good anymore. And you go, well, what happened to my life? How did this happen? And you have people, you say, well, I went to this church and the guy fired a shot over my bow and tried to say and warn me. You got to start listening to the warnings. You can't be a fool the rest of your life and not live like a fool. You think, well, no, I'm going to get away with this. It's going to work out for me. You are not the exception. Drugs, alcohol, these things are no respecter of persons. You say, well, what can I do if I'm not struggling with these things and I really do care? Then pick some people, pick your nephews, your cousins, your grandchildren, your children, and pray for them, because they are close to the beach. They are close to the undertow. They are in the middle of trying to sort these things out. And you have to keep talking because it's all so beautiful. The book talks about Satan disguising himself as an angel of light. The devil doesn't come with horns usually. In the horror movies, maybe, but in real life, he comes beautiful, sexy, cool. Come on, come with me. Look what I've got to offer. Your parents want you to be faithful. They want you to be dependable. They want you to work hard and sustain it in the same direction for a long time. I don't care about that. Come have fun with me now. And throw all that away. Steal, kill, destroy. Go to Joshua chapter 6. Now, I'm going to take a minute and read you this story. For some of you, it will be familiar. For some of you, you've never heard it. And for some of you, you've never heard it this way. So just track with me. The people of God, the people of Israel, are going from the wilderness. They've crossed into the promised land. But even the promised land, you do not take without a fight. You say, well, I'm just going to walk in. You will walk into heaven. But on this side, to receive the promises of God, you are not going to get them without a fight. And I don't mean a physical fight. I mean a spiritual fight. This isn't just sit there and it happens. You have to do certain things, not to get saved, but to be a Christian. There is a battle involved, because the enemy doesn't go, oh, well, oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize you became a Christian. We'll leave you alone now. So sorry. Okay, guys, back off of Bob because he's a Christian now. We can't do anything to him anymore. Anybody experienced that? I have not experienced that. It's like all hell broke loose the second I crossed the line. So in the Old Testament, there are physical battles. Here, Joshua is taking the people into the promised land. They come to a place called Jericho, and something bad is about to happen to Jericho. If you go read before this, the spies were sent into the land, 12 spies. Two of them said, hey, we can take it. 10 of them said, we can't take it. And because of that report and the people didn't believe what God could do, they spent 40 years till all those people who didn't believe dropped dead. And then the ones who were of a certain age and older got to go in the promised land with these two spies that did believe. The two spies who went into the promised land went to a place called Jericho, and a prostitute in town took them in, not for business, but took them in to protect them. Because they were scouting out the place, and they made a deal and said, when we come back, you will be saved, but this town is going down. So here's the story. Jericho was securely shut up because of the children of Israel. None went out, none came in. The Lord said to Joshua, see, I have given Jericho into your hand, its king and the mighty men of valor. So he's like, okay, they're trapped in there. So what would a normal army do? You would attack the city. They're shut up in this stronghold. So you attack the city. Now listen really close, because this may be the thing you got to hear. And I'll read you a verse that ties into this. The weapons of our warfare are not military weapons. We don't attack physical things. We attack spiritually. And you've got to get it in your head that when God attacks something, he doesn't do it the way the world does it. And it may seem completely foolish to you, but you have got to get over the foolish idea and realize if God says it, you got to try it. So he says, they're yours for the taking. And then this is the tactic. This is how you're going to take them. These are God's instructions. You shall march around the city. Oh, like that's going to do a lot of good. They'll shoot at us. You shall march around the city, all you men of war. You shall go all around the city once. This you shall do 6 days, and seven priests shall bear seven trumpets of ram's horns before the ark. But the seventh day you shall march around the city seven times, and the priests shall blow the trumpets. Now these are soldiers, these are fighting men. And Joshua comes out with this lame idea. Are you kidding? We want to kill something. We are soldiers. We are not going to walk around this city and think we're going to take it that way. Just do what he tells you to do. How complicated can this be? It gets real complicated when you don't live by faith. You live by what you dream up. Oh, no, no. I know God says that, but this is what we need to do. And then we get ourselves in trouble and wonder why it didn't work. It shall come to pass when they make a long blast with the ram's horn, and when you hear the sound of the trumpet, that all the people shall shout with a great shout, then the wall of the city will fall down flat. Oh, I'm sure that's going to happen. And the people shall go up, every man straight before him. Then Joshua, the son of Nun, called the priests and said to them, take up the Ark of the Covenant. Let seven priests bear seven trumpets of ram's horns before the Ark of the Lord. And he said to the people, proceed and march around the city, and let him who is armed advance before the Ark of the Lord. So it was, when Joshua had spoken to the people, that the seven priests bearing the seven trumpets of ram's horns before the Lord advanced and blew the trumpets, and the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord followed them. The armed men went before the priests, who blew the trumpets, and the rear guard came after the ark while the priests continued blowing the trumpets. Now Joshua had commanded the people, saying, you shall not shout or make any noise with your voice. Now, by the way, let me throw this in. If God tells you a technicality, stick to the technicality. Do what he says. There's a reason. And some of the reason is to see if we will obey. And kids experience this all the time. Your parents tell you to do something. You go, that doesn't make any sense. I don't want to do that. And the parents are thinking, just do what I asked you to do, right? We as parents understand this. I don't ask the questions. There's a reason why I'm asking you to do this. God is the same way. Enough with the questions. Just obey. So you're not supposed to say anything. You shall not shout nor make any noise with your voice, nor shall a word proceed out of your mouth until the day I say to you, shout, then you shall shout. So he had the ark of the Lord circle the city, going around at once. Then they came into the camp and lodged in the camp. And Joshua rose early in the morning, and the priests took up the ark of the Lord. Then seven priests bearing seven trumpets of ram horns before the ark of the Lord went on continually and blew the trumpets. And the armed men went before them, but the rear guard came after the ark of the Lord while the priests continued blowing the trumpets. And the second day they marched around the city once and returned to the camp. So they did 6 days. But it came to pass on the seventh day that they rose early about the dawning of the day and marched around the city seven times in the same manner. And on that day only they marched around the city seven times. And the seventh time it happened when the priests blew the trumpets that Joshua said to the people, shout, for the Lord has given you the city. Now the city shall be doomed by the Lord to destruction, it and all who are in it. Only Rahab the harlot shall live, she and all who are with her in the house, because she hid the messengers that we sent. And you, by all means, abstain from the accursed things, lest you become accursed when you take of the accursed things and make the camp of Israel a curse and trouble it. But all the silver and gold and vessels of bronze and iron are consecrated to the Lord. They shall come into the treasury of the Lord. So the people shouted when the priests blew the trumpets. And it happened when the people heard the sound of the trumpet and the people shouted with a great voice that the wall fell down flat. You say, well, I don't believe that. You've never given him a chance, maybe. Why don't you find something in the Bible and go, well, I don't believe that, but I'm gonna do a little test and I'm gonna try doing it his way and see what happens. You'd be amazed, because God has a tendency to back up his word. So don't be sitting there going, well, I don't believe that for the rest of your life. You may die not believing and miss out on your whole life. Then the people went into the city, every man straight before him, and they took the city, and they utterly destroyed all that was in the city, both man and woman, young and old, ox and sheep and donkey, with the edge of the sword. But Joshua had said to the two men who had spied out the country, go into the harlot's house, and from there bring out the woman, all that she has, as you swore to her. And the young men who had been spies went in, brought out Rahab, her father, her mother, her brothers, and all that she had. So they brought out all her relatives and left them outside the camp of Israel. But they burned the city and all that was in it with fire. Now, what happened there? Rahab got delivered from a stronghold. How did Rahab get delivered from a stronghold? Now, the problem is, you say, well, it wasn't a stronghold, it was her home. And that may be the problem. You have made your stronghold your home. You have decided that your weakness, your vice, the thing that has a grip on you is where you're the most comfortable, and it may be something that's going to be utterly destroyed, and God comes along and sends people and his word and his spirit, and he marches around your life and tries to take down everything that's got to be removed and only leave him to save you, and you won't go for it. And you're stove up in your stronghold. You're hiding in there. You're thinking, no, I'm safe here. I'm safe here. The place that you have made your stronghold, if your stronghold is not him, is the place you will die. Amen. Now, how do you bring these walls down? How do you get out? You have to figure out how to do it God's way, not your way. I do not have the power to overcome these things by myself. But in Jesus' name, it sounds squirrely and simple, but in Jesus' name, let me tell you something, the world, the universe shakes. You say, well, I think I can. You can't, or you would have by now. I did a message years ago called Rationalize, and we tell ourselves rational lies in order to rationalize our behavior. Oh, I can manage this. I can do this. And we ride this roller coaster. Get some help. I finally got to the place where I had to sit down with someone. I was terrified. The struggles that I had, if somebody knew, they'd throw me away and whatever. You know what? There's only so many struggles. I can start guessing. I'll pick a random person. I can guess what your struggle is. There's only so many things you can be screwed up with. You say, oh no, I found some secret sin. Nobody's ever found my secret sin. Wow, can't wait to hear about that. The devil's only got so many arrows in his quiver. It's the same old stupid stuff because we're stupid sheep that just fall for the same old things. Throw a little bit of that in him. He'll go for that. He won't go for that, but he'll go for this. Oh, take her out, shoes. That's her deal, shoes. Take her out with shoes. Oh, now I'm getting booed. See, you liked it when we were talking about the guy's problems. All right, go to 2 Corinthians chapter 10. And believe it or not, we're closer to being done than we were when we started. 2 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 1. Now I, Paul, myself am pleading with you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ, who in presence am lowly among you, meaning Paul. He says, I may not be all that physically, and he probably, wasn't any big shot to look at. Who in presence am lowly among you, but being absent am bold toward you. But I beg you that when I am present, I may not be bold with the confidence by which I intend to be bold against some who think of us as if we walked according to the flesh. Like, I don't want to have to come tell you this. It's pretty obvious. For though we walk in the flesh, in other words, these bodies, we do not war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty in God for pulling down what? My translation says strongholds, which the word means to fortify, a castle it could mean, through the idea of holding safely. So there are strongholds that can get in your mind. There are strongholds that can get in your person. And these areas that you have somehow, without knowing it, created a safe place for your vice to exist. And honestly, until things get really, really, really bad, people don't let anybody in. The consequence has to ratchet up. And there's a room here filled with consequence, I promise you. Where you protected it, you kept your sin, your wickedness, your vice so safe because it's really all you had. And you have so much riding on it. Because if you're gonna drink, for instance, you gotta keep drinking. It works. It takes more, but that's your fuel. That's what gets you going. That's what kind of chills you or gets you where you can talk. The things that people will say drunk is just amazing to me. If you wanna know who somebody really is, just try to catch them drunk. And if you can get them off the liquor and get them on the spirit, the big S spirit, then you see what you might have. You say, well, I couldn't be that person unless I'm drinking. Why don't you drink something different? Tap a different well and see what being sober but high at the same time is. Now that's pretty cool. So he says, we walk in the flesh, do not war according to the flesh, for the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty in God for pulling down strongholds. So whatever your stronghold is, let's go with the Joshua story. Let's say you are Jericho. You got a spot in you that's Jericho, and you go to the Bible and it says, okay, here's how you take down the strongholds. You say, well, that's stupid. I'm not doing that. If I could shoot at it or you know, handcuff it or something, maybe, but I'm not going to do this thing. Okay, then you're going to die that way. And I've said this before. I quit telling people. I meet someone, they're a Christian, and go, hang in there. You're going to be okay. You know what? It's not true. God may not want you in heaven yet, and he may not want you living like hell here. But if he can neutralize you and you think, well, look at my cool little castle. I'm all safe and pretty and neat. You are locked up. That's what you are. You are a prisoner in this beautiful little castle that he's built for you. They, well, what's wrong with this? I'm having a good time. Let me tell you something. I've lived long enough and in struggle enough, you are not going to end up having a good time in your little castle. It don't work. So he says, it's mighty in God, pulling down strongholds, casting down arguments and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God. So now it's in your brain. Think about how much is in your brain. You say, well, no, my body gets all stimulated and wants these things. It's in your brain. If you get your brain captive under God's control, you'd be amazed at what you can walk away from. It starts in your brain. And the reason that drugs are so dangerous is it screws your brain up. The way your brain fires and normal releases of chemicals that are for pleasure and all these things, you keep jacking it up, and it doesn't even know what to do anymore. And it's abnormal. Casting down arguments, every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ, and being ready to punish all disobedience when your obedience is fulfilled. So bringing every thought. Now let me tell you why I don't bring every thought into captivity when I don't. You want to know why? Because I don't want to. And when you decide that you're going to reserve a little something, something for you when you want it, you may, but it's going to cost you. That's all I'm telling you. Do whatever you're going to do. I get that. But there is a consequence. You say, well, nobody's caught me yet. We got time. And you say, well, what if no one ever catches me? You just die in your castle and your life's a waste. You say, well, no, but I give money to the church. Check the records. I participate in charitable things. I'm a good person. I'm not interested in you being a good person anymore. I'm interested in you being the best person that God intended you to be. Maximization of your life, being everything he intended for you to be. And all this may not matter to you now, but when you stand before God himself, Jesus, as a Christian at the Bema seat, where you give an account for the deeds done in the flesh, you'll wish, you'll think, maybe I should have thought this or listened a little closer. And if you're not a believer, you are so gone, you have no idea. You say, well, I don't believe that. Well, knock yourself out, because you will. All this stuff you say you don't believe, just like that in a moment of time, you will be a believer. It'll just be too late to believe. Because right now you have to do it by faith. You go, oh, well, if I could see God, I'd believe. You know what? I don't know that you would, but you will.
Before Richard comes back to wrap things up for us today, I'd like to share a couple important things with you. Let me encourage you to take a minute and check out our website, richardellistalks.com. You'll find today's talk right there in the talks page, along with all of Richard's messages. You can even forward them to a friend so they can hear them too. You'll also find the prayer wall to add your prayer requests, a link to connect with us, the contribute page for you to be able to give to this ministry, a radio station finder, all our social media links, and much more. So check it out, richardellistalks.com. And Richard's back now to wrap up today's talk.
Go read Ephesians chapter 6. If you decide you want to fight, then soldiers have armor. Ephesians 6 talks about that armor. It specifically verse 13 to 18. You say, well, I don't believe all that. You know what? You're going to get shot at so much, you're going to decide, I may need to put on some protective gear. You never see soldiers on the battlefield in boxer shorts. It ain't happening. They know it's war, and so they go into battle equipped for battle. The sooner you figure out this is war, a guy came up to me today, this service said, I'm getting shot at. Then put something on and use the tools that you have to fight back. Fight back. He said, well, I don't know what that means. It's a spiritual battle. I read this verse all the time, but just so you'll know where it is again, John 10:10. The thief does not come except to steal, kill, destroy. Steal, kill, destroy. That is all they're interested in your life. The devil is not interested in blessing you God's way. You got one life. What are you doing with the only life you've got? Give it to him. Let him manage it. Let him be not just your savior. Let him be the Lord, the boss, the controller, where he tells you what to do, where to go. And when these thoughts come, you say, Lord, you got to help me because these thoughts are triggering this behavior. And if I go back to that, I'm going to ruin my life. Help me see what's going on. Help me not think myself more highly than I should. Bring these thoughts down where I know where I am, where you are, and what's going on here.
Thanks for tuning in today to Richard Ellis Talks. With the busy schedule everyone has these days, it means the world to us that you would take this time to listen. Let us know how it has touched your heart by calling us at 855-6-RICHARD. You can also connect with us at our website, richardellistalks.com. One last thing, Richard Ellis Talks is a daily program, but also has daily costs. And being a listener-supported program means we rely on the financial partnership of our listeners, which means you. Maybe you've given to this ministry before or have waited for the right time. Well, we believe that these talks with Richard are making a difference in your life. So this is how you can make a difference to ours. You can contribute by giving us a call at 855-6-RICHARD or at our website, richardellistalks.com. Thank you for your very generous gifts. It truly means so much to us. God bless, and thanks for listening to Richard Ellis Talks.